We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in. While the Port of Milwaukee is not in the heart of the city, it may just be the heart of its commerce. The waterfront hub transports goods to and from all around the world, thanks to its proximity to highways and train systems, and of course to the Great Lakes. But for as many ships, trains, and trucks that navigate the Port of Milwaukee, there are at least five times as many stories coming through it. Leah Dobkin has collected many of these tales, captured the culture of the port, and documented its history in the new book, Soul of a Port. Dobkin tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce that most Milwaukeeans aren't aware of what really goes on down at the port.
I think it's the best-kept secret in Milwaukee. I mean, we go across the Home Bridge, I don't know how many times a year, and we pass the port all the time, and no one knows anything about it. And it's a really important place that contributes to our prosperity and a lot of other benefits the port provides for local companies as well as citizens. So, yeah, I think it's not appreciated as it should be.
I think most people haven't really had a chance to go down to the Port of Milwaukee and see what's going on. Based on what you observed, give us a glimpse of what's going on a day-to-day basis down there.
A lot of bustle and hustle at any given time. Even in the wintertime, with the sort of hibernating giants of those old, you know, those large 1,000-foot cargo ships or ships that are there, there's a lot of work going on just to prepare those ships for the shipping season in the spring when the water melts. So all four seasons, there's a lot going on there. There's about 250 ships that come in a year. I think there's something like 120,000 trucks a year come through there, and what is it? Oh, yeah, 7,000 rail cars. And so it's not just a shipping port, but it's intermodal in that these other forms of transportation interconnect with each other just to make cargo shipping more efficient for local manufacturers here.
That's a point you make in the book, that intermodal aspect of the Port of Milwaukee that makes it so unique compared to many other ports of its size.
Yes, and also the highway. A lot of ports don't have such easy access to the highway. So those trucks come in and out with the salt that you see, those big mounds of salt along the Home Bridge. Those trucks come in and out and collect that salt a couple of seconds at a time, supposedly. They're incredibly efficient, and they just get dispersed all over the place. So if some city is low on salt, you can be sure it's not us when the weather gets bad.
Now, you also describe how everything from concrete that builds our roads and our bridges, even wind turbines, are things that go through the Port of Milwaukee.
That's correct. One thing that's fascinating is sort of the exchanges that are going on. So, I mean, all of us have probably bought some technology, so computer, cell phone, something from China, correct? Well, even a cell phone has like 10 or 12 different types of metals. And so China will maybe manufacture what we buy, the various electronics, and then we get it back. And we take the precious metals and sell it back to China. And so then they make precious metals like copper, for example, and they use it in the cell phones or other electronics. And then we buy it. Then we recycle it here. Then we sell it back to them. And it just continues on. And there's also some surprising things. Like, for example, in the United States, we don't grow capers.
I didn't know that.
And so we ship them in. Well, actually, they come in, and ultimately they're on a container car and on rails coming in, and so from Europe. So we don't have capers unless we do this. So if you like capers and you have recipes with capers, you can thank the port for that. Chicken feet. We export chicken feet to China. They just love chicken feet. We have plenty, and so that's another export. So it's really interesting sort of the exchanges that go on, too, and the surprises of what's actually coming in and coming out of the port, in addition to sort of the raw materials that you expect, like the steel and the asphalt and the cement and the salt and the coal.
Now, the Port of Milwaukee played a huge role in the development of the city, as well as the development of Milwaukee's once famous manufacturing base.
That's correct. And it's the seed of the city. And so, I mean, the first ship, cargo ship that came in was in 1835. And throughout the history of the port, the local politicians and the citizens have supported the port through bond issues and securing federal dollars to sort of build the port up to what it is today. And over the history of the port. I mean, you first got, you know, fur trappers and transporting beaver fur, and, you know, now you're transporting biodiesel. So it's really interesting how it's evolved over the years.
You mentioned how the city has been involved in the development of the port, and that's an interesting aspect about Milwaukee's port, is that it is a public entity.
And it's very rare for a city to own a port. But what's even more rare is that most ports don't make money. And our port makes like $1.3 million over average over the last 5 years that gives back to the city. And so it's a really valuable city department. And so we don't realize that even in the recession where, you know, a lot of ports were having pretty significant declines. I think the last statistic for 2009 was our imports were, I think, up 25% when most people had, you know, negatives. And so it's really impressive that it's been able to weather the economic storm here, not like many other entities. So that's the other sort of surprise. And it continues. I mean, right now, steel is turning around and doing. I just found out from Eric Reinold yesterday, who's the port director, that steel exports and imports are just increasing and people going back to work. So it's in some ways, it's sort of like frogs in nature, an indication of where we're heading. And it's very promising that the economy is turning around. Port's an indication of that.
Now, steel had previously saved the port, and I'm going to let you explain the story behind that back in the 1980s.
Oh, that's true. The port is very flexible, and so when regulations change and the basically sort of global and national markets change, you have to be flexible to adapt to these changes. And so a couple of years, they were importing a lot of grain through a federal program that provided grain and food to third world countries. And there were some changes in the regulations, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but basically almost overnight it shut that down for the port. And to their credit, they started reaching out more to steel exports, and just within just a few years, just, you know, really grew tremendously. And so the ebbs and flows of all these markets and these regulations, you have to stay on your toes if you work at the port to keep things going, keep things moving. And so that's really impressive over time how they've done that.
Now, we talk about the commodities that come through the Port of Milwaukee, but the port is also home to ferries. And you were able to find several stories about the passenger ships going across Lake Michigan, including the Milwaukee Clipper, which was this very elegant ship.
Very elegant ship. I mean, even Liberace played his piano, even before Liberace was Liberace. Yes, I think many people who are as old as I am, or perhaps older, will remember the Clipper. And people are fond of the Clipper and going and using it. And now we have Lake Express to continue that tradition. But after the book was written, I wanted to include some recipes from these various ships because I came across this book that sort of displayed all these different recipes, and I got really curious. And I contacted the Clipper Historical Society, and they told me that the last captain of the Clipper was still alive. He was 86 years old. And even though the book was written, I said, I got to interview this guy. And he was wonderful. And he had great stories. Some stories are in the book. Some are on my website now. And it's never ending. The port has never ending stories. But the ferries are just so much a part of our history. The whole idea of actually putting rail cars and transporting them across the lake just sort of is mind-boggling. And that's happened for many, many years until the economics didn't work anymore. But, you know, sometimes when you talk to people down the port, they wonder, well, maybe something like that could be recreated with trucks going across the lake and saving pollution and saving time. And so that's in the back of people's minds, that perhaps they can sort of reinvigorate that type of transportation. So right now we're shipping cars and people with Lake Express, and they have their own wonderful stories.
Now, the port isn't without some of its sad tales, including the eviction of the Kashubes from Jones Island. And you compiled a lot of stories of the people from that. And it just kind of breaks your heart. Tell me, who were the Kashubes?
Well, the Kashubes were some people who lived on a peninsula off of Poland. And they came here and inhabited Jones Island. And you have to remember, Jones Island shifting sandbar over the years. And, you know, not many people really wanted to live there. And so they lived there. They were like squatters. They didn't own the properties that they had, but they created this very rich culture down there. And when I was doing my research, I was at the Port of Milwaukee, actually, going through some of the materials they had. And they had, you know, cabinets filled with all these materials. And I was coming across this just almost 100-year-old newspaper. And it was very delicate. You know, you don't want to do anything to it. If you blow, you think it's going to fall apart. So carefully, I opened it up. And I found this incredible story about the Kashubes that's in the book. The decision was that perhaps we should take the commerce that's happening in the inner harbor and build up the outer harbor so it won't interfere with car traffic, because at the time there was more and more people starting to own cars and that became more of a problem. So they looked to Jones Island as the answer. But here's this fishing village with all these people living here. And also the steel company was there. So the combination of the steel company and the city of Milwaukee had to evict these people over a long period of time. And, you know, I found out that the last person who was evicted, he was in his late 70s, and he was a bar owner. And I heard, you know, after 6 months of being evicted, he died. Yeah. So people were really attached to the lifestyle there on the island and missed it. And there's some stories in the book about that from this newspaper article that I came across, where the Kashubes were talking about that whole experience of living on Jones Island. But not only that, the people who I interviewed for the book today, you know, who worked at the port, who are now retired, their parents were Kashubes and they were married on Jones Island, or they were born on Jones Island. So even though, you know, this was way back when, there's still very strong memories for people who live here today in Milwaukee about the Kashubes and what had happened to them.
Well, you not only talk about the culture of the Kashubes, but you talk about the culture of the port. Can you give us a little bit more of an idea about the community and the work ethic that exists down there?
What I find most unique is the cooperation. It's like a little town down there. And even competitors help each other out. So, for example, there would be one company who has, you know, bags of salt, and another company is like a container yard, and they need some salt, you know, and they'll, you know, share their salt with the container yard. Or the container yard may have some special equipment to move some cargo, and they'll, you know, volunteer their equipment. Or when the wind turbines come in, they're so large, there's hardly, you know, enough space to transport them. So the container yards, you know, open up some space for them so they can transport them onto trucks to go out. And so they come in on ships and then go out by truck. And so there's just tremendous cooperation that you wouldn't expect from the various tenants down there. And this just feels like a little town, and a lot of characters too.
Tell us about some of those characters.
That's a hard one. I mean, the book is filled with stories of the variety of characters that are down there. And that was my favorite part of researching the book, was interviewing people who work down there today. Well, Francis Nichols, his name is his Mickey. He's retired from the Gillen Company. And the Gillen Company is a marine contractor who, you know, really helped build the infrastructure of the port. But not only that, they helped build the infrastructure for many of our 12 buildings and bridges and some of our cherished places like Potawatomi Bingo and all that.
The Harley-Davidson Museum.
Exactly. I mean, they're involved and have been involved in continuing to develop the city. And I interviewed a retired worker there, and he had very colorful language. Most was edited out of the book, understandably. But he gave me a perspective of what it's like to be a pile driver. And I've been on highways where I hear the sound, you know, that annoying boom, boom, boom sound. But I didn't know what it really took and what was really going on and the complexity of what they're doing. But he also had personal stories about what it was like working down there and what he saw was some of the advantages of working down there. He really surprised me in the end. I asked him, you know, what did you like best about being a pile driver down at the port? And he said the money, you know, right, without even a second hesitation. But then he stopped and he said, you know, what I really liked was those rainy days where I can go home to my wife and make love to her, because people in the manufacturing field, they don't have that option. But we do. When it's really bad weather, we can go home and make love to our wives. And I thought that was pretty funny.
What a character.
Yeah.
Well, you also talk about some of the greening efforts at the port. What are some of these environmentally friendly efforts being undertaken there?
Well, the port is definitely greening itself, but you have to look historically that they have been transporting energy from, you know, wood originally to coal to oil and now biodiesel and ethanol. And there's a company down there that is actually, you know, sort of a focal point for biodiesel and ethanol and helping transport that in and out and distribute it more efficiently. As the years go by, there's, you know, federal and state legislation and incentives to use biodiesel and ethanol. And so they're right in the hub of all of that. And ultimately, as this market develops, they want to refine it and manufacture it down there as well. So biodiesel and ethanol is a real interesting development down there, one of the biggest things that's happened recently, I would say. And I think it's our future. You know, it's clean. And it's ultimately the prices will go down as demand increases. So right now it's not as competitive, but prospects are very favorable that it will be in the future.
Leah Dobkin, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Leah Dobkin is the author of the new book, Soul of a Port, The History and Evolution of the Port of Milwaukee, published by the History Press. She'll be doing an event at Next Chapter Bookshop in Mequon tonight. She'll also be signing books at the Grohmann Museum at the Milwaukee School of Engineering next Friday evening as part of an exhibit featuring photographs of lake boats. There is more information about both of these events and links, as well as supplemental audio, at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take one more short break and then be back with some prose and a poem to wrap up our show today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.